Hey, friend, and welcome back to the Freedom Entrepreneur Podcast. I'm your host, Lindsay Sutherland. Excited to have you here with me as we bring another inspirational guest. Today, we have Stephanie Pierce with us. Also, Steph, you'll hear me call her Steph. She's the founder of the Picky Tongue, let's say, Picky Tongue Cooking, which the story behind it is really interesting. I'm excited for you to stick around and hear it. More importantly, she's going to talk about how limitations in life, how she was able to overcome them and build a business that allows her to travel all over the world. One of her passions is travel. So I know those of you who are listening that are my travel spirits are going to really dig this episode. So let's get started. Steph, please introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about your business and what got you here.
Don't miss an episode. Subscribe to this show on whatever podcast player you prefer and follow me on Facebook and Instagram.
Hey, it's Lindsay, and I want to pop in here because I know how overwhelming it can be to get started building an online business. I've even spoken with people who've paid thousands of dollars for help from people who are truly experts in this, and they're still feeling confused about what direction is right for them or if their idea is even a good one. Listen, you don't have to guess or pray or hope or any of that. There is a way to test the market to ensure your idea is a good one so you can launch with confidence. And that's exactly what I show you in this simple 35-minute video training. I keep it simple because I know you already have so much swirling around in your brain. I'm not here to add more confusion because what you need right now is clarity. And that's what's in store for you in the short training called How to Tell If Your Idea Will Be Profitable. Access the video right now by texting the word freedom to 55444. Stop guessing and start taking strategic action. Text freedom to 55444. All right, back to the show.
Fair enough. Well, thank you so much, Lindsay, for having me. I really appreciate your time and energy. I think what you do is amazing.
Thank you.
So my name is Stephanie, and I started Picky Tongue Cooking during the pandemic because we all had to have our projects, of course. And it began with a book called Picky Tongue, the Cookbook. And so that's essentially my culinary autobiography. So that was like a place where I sort of poured my heart and my story into essentially like recipes, and then each recipe had like a story about exactly why, where it came from, etc. And this was when I was living in Tel Aviv, and I lived there for a few years. And there was this block of time, of course, where I was home, like if we were all home. And then I was like, okay, now that we can, then once masks came off, etc., I began teaching cooking initially as part of my thesis project for my master's degree, which kind of fizzled out because time, energy, etc., la di da, fine. But essentially, teaching cooking is something that I've always really enjoyed doing, and I wanted to, in its essence, pursue that as much as humanly possible. So my business basically is like a sort of two-pronged situation wherein I am teach cooking to people who are neurodivergent like myself. I have dyspraxia and I have bipolar disorder as well. But I teach cooking to people as well who are more on the neurotypical side of things. And then I write my books. I'm in the process of writing my currently my fourth cookbook, which is something it's a bit different than what I've done before. This book is going to be called Picky Tongue Sassy, and this one is a different game. It's pretty cheeky. It's like aphrodisiac cuisine matched with like stories about like raunchy sex and gadgets, and it is super fun. Just sort of where I'm at right at the moment. And then I'm teaching cooking at the moment when I'm living in Germany, which is the present moment. So I have like a small sort of business where I'm teaching cooking to my community, which is
Okay.
really, it's a lot of fun.
Okay. We have so much to dig into, but I mean, first, I just want to say how much I appreciate your creative spirit and how you have totally leaned into the truth of who you are and embraced it. But I want to start like a little bit in the beginning when you weren't fully doing that. Like, what was it like when you were letting yourself be limited by limitations? Like, let's talk about the mindset piece. You know what I mean? There's a deeper message right in that truth.
Totally, sure. Well, okay. Back up in the States, like there was a certain level of like, it's okay to be disabled, la di da, ba ba ba, fine. But everybody still gives you the sort of like the pity face, the asking the wrong questions. What does that feel like? Well, how does it fit in being neurotypical? Because same goes to you. You know what I mean? Like, it's one of those. My biggest struggle, I think, was in terms of my communication skills. Like, I still speak a bit quickly. I know that I don't hear, but people tell me I speak fast. I'm sorry. It's part of the dyspraxia, you see. Ultimately, being able to be disabled and be an entrepreneur, it's really about forgetting that you're disabled. As, I mean, it's a very, I guess, like the response that people don't necessarily want, but that's the bottom line, is that we're disabled as a community, yes, but we're much bigger than that. Serve people first, ultimately, which is the most important factor here.
I love that. I just think that's such, you know what is so, in a way, a beautiful silver lining, I think, is the fact that when listening to your journey, and I read, reading your bio ahead of time, I'm like, wow, in a way, it's, this might sound even crazy to say, but it's almost a blessing because you had something
Have
physical
something.
you could look at and say, I don't, this is just this, I could, you said it yourself, you set it aside, just like you were explaining. And I think in a lot of ways, a lot of us have a disability, but many of us don't even, we're not aware of it. It'd be almost like so much easier to be able to like, look at this and I can set this aside. But the power to do that, that's where you had the grit and you had that determination to do that. Like, how did you find that?
Yeah, I spent a long time feeling very much like, I guess, disabled by my own disability, because I felt very weak and powerless. Like, I wanted when I was little to go to law school, for example, but I had a terrible stutter. I spoke way faster than I do today. Like, I couldn't express myself in a way that I thought was appropriate, quote unquote, for like an appropriate presence in the courtroom, for example. And that really was just a matter of like waking up one morning when I published my first book, and I was just like, you know what, I can do this. And then I started doing a couple different like podcasts and such. And the first one was a little crazy because I couldn't speak properly. I was still kind of on that cusp. And then in terms of, I suppose a relatively important aspect of it was being able to manage my emotions, because yes, dyspraxia is something that in my case hinders some aspects of my person, but the bipolar disorder, it comes in and plays a different game altogether. So when you couple the two, you're looking at a very sort of like a complicated aspect of an individual. And being able to manage my emotions and my moods, and I tend to be a very impulsive person. That's part of why my story is the way that it is. So yeah, when I had to manage that, and through medication, of course, or bipolar disorder, and I'm actually easing away from them these days, which is a really interesting point, like touch upon at some point if you have time.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's really just about hearing. Okay, one thing. Okay, there's one anecdote that's more specific, I suppose, with my friend who I met when I was living in Israel. He came from Venezuela, and he had come right at the time where that country was just destroyed financially and such. He tells me, Stephanie, you're from the States. You grew up in a decent family. You never had to like go hunting for food because there was none. You never had to deal with this, but you let yourself and your disability identify so much of your person. Like, first thing you told me was, hey, I have dyspraxia. Like, I don't care. I want to know who you are as a person. And that was in 2017, I believe. And that was like a sort of adulting moment.
I mean, I don't mean to dwell on it, but I want to in a way because I think your story is so inspirational and so many people need to hear what you have to say, your perspective, because even and whether I mean there's the whole enormous, I'm sure, people who are in the same boat that you were, that were disabled or are disabled and are living with that identity, and they're holding themselves back because they're seeing it as a hurdle. And then on the flip side, there's the people who may not have that type of thing who are giving ourselves a story, and we can listen to your story and think, wow, I actually can do this. She could do that. I could do this. So that's the only reason. And I appreciate you going into that because I don't know. I feel like this whole podcasting thing is really a way for people to hear a story, to hear a piece of truth, and to say, wow, my goodness, what an amazing woman. And if she could do that, then I could do that. And so thank you so much. Like, I think that is just such a profound mindset piece. I wanted to make sure we really tackled it. And I have to give you props because that is just a powerful thing for you to sit in that space. And cool as heck that you got to go to Israel to like you got to go all the way to Israel. How many countries have you been to?
I lost track. I think I'm around 35,
Oh
36.
my gosh, that is so bad. Okay, quick side story. What has been your favorite? Like, do you have a favorite?
That's a difficult question. I mean, I've liked everywhere that I've been to for different reasons. Honestly, like every country has something beautiful to offer. Like I really feel like you meet great people. Like as a chef, the food in most countries is extraordinary. One place I didn't enjoy eating actually was Puerto Rico colony, I know, but yeah, still.
Oh, Puerto Rico. I've been there
That
and I
was the
probably didn't
one
get as
place.
much immersion into the culture as you did because I was only there for like a couple nights. But that is a cool place to go check out. And what a neat thing too. Do you learn, do you make a point of like learning the food and the food like everywhere you go and do you incorporate that into your teaching?
So, I mean, like, I'm a complete and utter sponge for all the just food and life. I mean, like whenever I travel, I spend half my time eating. And if I can like meet locals and if I meet at the house for dinner, I'm just over the moon. Like the dream right there. It's super cool. No, I'm very much I absolutely love to learn new cuisines. Like whenever I'm teaching, like whether I do it, I mean I have a base for just about every world's cuisine already in my pocket. And when preparing for a lesson, like what I'm doing these days, I'll just like, if I can go to the country, fantastic. I'll go for a couple of days, I'll just eat everything inside, buy a book, and then I'll do a bunch of stuff around that. Do nothing but that cuisine for months on end, and then I just have it perfectly, and then I can go teach it, and it's absolutely fine.
Oh, what a cool thing. I just love that. Yeah. Okay. So let's dig into your business. So this person in Israel, awesomely a good friend, calls you out, helps you reset your frame, your mindset, and now you're like, okay, I'm going for it. What was your first step?
Well, I wanted to write a book for a while, and that was essentially what happened first. Like, that took some time. I didn't really know what I was doing, and did everything myself, except for the pictures. I hired a friend, that was fine, la-di-da. But then, yeah, so I wrote the first book, and then at first I was going for like a regular publishing system, but because this was pandemic, so they weren't really working properly, so I ended up going for Amazon, which is perfectly reasonable way of doing these things, as I learned later. I had to do it a little bit wrong to learn to do it right. It was one of those. But yeah, so
Do you
it's
still
sort of
publish on Amazon now, or do you have you found another way of going about it?
I have three books on Amazon, and then the book I'm working on now is going to be with a more official publisher, just because I don't have the energy to deal with the marketing. Like I do work, and I have a lot going on in my life in general to also deal with marketing and stuff like that. And it's not
Okay.
my game, honestly. It's really not. It's probably the issue that I have the most struggled with in my business right now is not knowing how to sell myself properly. That's sort of where I struggle because, yes, I think I've overcome a lot, but imposter syndrome is a very real thing. Like, it happens to all of us. And I think for me, it's very much like waking up in the morning, being like, sort of, like I said, forgetting, if you will, that I'm disabled and I do my thing and la di da. I need to stop saying that, actually. Realizing this now. Anyway. But yeah, so how do I put it? So yes, that was the first step. Like I said, right in the first book. And
Okay.
then
And what,
like I
remind me
was
again, what was the first book called?
Picky Tongue in the Cookbook. And then my
Oh, then that
second
was
book
the original. And then like,
was the
what
rest.
was your inspiration behind that? You'd said early on it was for neurodivergent. Is there a reason you came up with the name Picky Tongue?
That's actually a funny story. So in 2014, I was finishing off my undergraduate degree in communicative disorders, and I wanted to write a blog. Now, this is before blogs were what they are today. Like, they were very much like a hot sauce. So I told my friend, like my best friend at the time, like, I want to write a blog. He's like, I need a name. It's like, well, Steph, you're the biggest food snob we know, but we can't make it like vulgar, if you will. So we went for Picky Tongue, as in like the discerning palate, if you will, but keeping it sexy and cute. And here we go.
That is a great name, and it's memorable. Like you said, are
And
like, I don't do marketing, but I think the name itself is so good because it like instantly pictures somebody who has a picky tongue, which there's a ton of people, and it gives them the freedom. And I'd be curious too, like when you wrote, I haven't read it. I'd love to get a copy of your book, but do you talk about texture? Like, is texture an important piece of that, the cooking?
it isn't something that I've touched much upon. No, I think it's interesting though. It's something to consider. Like, a lot of people who have disabilities are quite specific with textures of food. Like, personally, I can get behind most things except for like liver and stuff like that, because it's got that funky, spongy, nasty, yucky that we can't deal with, honestly. I'm
I
not
haven't even been brave enough to try that.
You know what? Do it and then tell me how it goes for you. I would love
Okay,
to hear your
okay.
experience.
I should, because it's such a healthy food. You know, everybody's like,
It's
it's
great for you. Like, I
healthy.
mean, all is super good for you. Like, it's super good for you in general to eat organs, but it's not my favorite in general. I'm not gonna lie.
Well,
We
the
like
reason I
it
asked about the pit
animals.
that specifically is because I've noticed with all my kids and even my husband, which this was never a thing for me, I prefer savory, flavorful food as far as that goes. Like, obviously, most people don't want to eat bland food, but the people in my house that have the most picky tongue are always, it's always about the texture. It's like, it's not so much I don't like stewed tomatoes, mom, because I like tomatoes on my hamburger. I just don't want them cooked in chili. You know what I mean? And so everybody, my husband won't mix beans with rice. I'm like, that's so weird because beans and rice go together, you know, in my head, it seems. But he's like, no, I just don't like the texture of beans. And I'm like, but he's like, I'll eat beans by themselves. I'm like, it's about the texture. And so I had to ask because I was like, I wonder if that is like cooking about texture or is it just really about like flavor and mixing certain flavors? And I'm just curious, like, tell me more about how you designed your book. That's what I'm trying to ask you.
Fair enough. Well, the first one, like I said, was very much like a sort of like trial of, yes, yeah, this workout. And then my second book, it's called Picky Tongue Idiot Proof. It's designed for people who are neurodivergent. And that's a really fun book. That was a different project altogether, and as much as it was really okay, let's do something for people who want to tiptoe into the kitchen, but they're scared because disability, visual problems, processing disorders, all the myths, you know. And this book actually caters to that population. And as
Okay.
much as, it's really cool, it's really nice. Like, basically, so like the font is huge. It's a very, like, intentional setup. Like, every step is photographed. It was a whole project to put that together. Like, we did the photo shoot at my home, and it took 2.5 days, and the photographer and I were going nuts. Like, the house was covered in ingredients, herbs, props, red. My mom came, which was a bad idea in hindsight, because she got very like into it, you know, mom's adventure.
Yeah,
Very funny.
that's awesome.
But anyway, so that's a really nice book. Everything is like sort of food glossaries, and then like personal tips and tricks, and this is how you make pasta, whatever. Just like really breaking things down so clean so that anybody can use them. And it's also good for beginning cookbooks for children, but the target demographic really is for people who are neurodivergent. And also, I can use people who have like visual issues, like, for example, in terms of like the fontage. Everything is very like high contrast photographs, which is really nice. Pardon me. That's pretty cool. And then the third book that I wrote is again a different game. It's called Picky Tongue Lockdown, and that's slow food. I have a weird sense of humor. It's true. So it's like food that we spent so long cooking during the pandemic. So I actually began that book during the pandemic, and then I was like, whatever, forget about it. It's on the back burner. And then when I moved to France, I had some time at one point because I wasn't working. I'm gonna finish this book. Let's go, And that was really nice. It's a cool project as well.
That's neat. That's really fun. Well, and also one thing I learned, I mean, you described it too. So my son, I didn't tell you this, but my son is also neurodivergent. And there's been a few things I've learned just in being his mother. And that's like this fixation, like you said, how you go to a country and then you like just dig in until you really feel it. Like he does the same thing, and he does the same thing with food. He'll eat that way where he'll like make one huge batch of food and he'll eat the same thing all week long. And I'm like, oh, interesting. Like that isn't something that most people do. Like we'll make something new for dinner, maybe have it for leftovers the next day, but like that's it. Nobody really wants leftovers. No, he'll commit to this. He's like, this is my thing for the week, and that's it. And I actually think that's a really smart way of doing it for him as a student, and he works. He doesn't work full time, but he has a job and he's still in high school. He's a senior, but he makes his own food and he batches it for like a whole week. He makes himself breakfast and lunches, and sometimes he'll even eat that for dinner. I'm like, man, could you imagine eating the same thing every day for like 5 days straight? That's what he'll do, and he'd rather eat his food than mine. It's all good, he's his way. And that's what I thought was so cool about that, because it's kind of exactly what you described. Like you lock yourself in, you're gonna cook this one thing for however long it takes you to master it. That's essentially what he would dig that book. I'm gonna probably get that for him. Okay, so I also really admire how your books are like a series. They're all the Picky Tongue series. Like it's such a class act. Like you've done a great job with that branding. I just think it's fantastic. When did you venture into teaching people how to cook, and how did that process go?
Fun story. All right. So, like, after I graduated from my university, I went to Texas State. So I decided to do like a year trip because, why not? Let's go. And so I backpacked through Europe. I rampaged like a maniac for 3 months. I went to 10 different countries, and I was like, I don't have a home anymore. I'm done with college. I don't have a job or a partner right now, so I'm just gonna stay in Europe. Whatever. Yeah, screw it. So I chose London because I didn't have to learn a new language. Like I was gonna go to Berlin, but it was like I have to learn German, which is ironic because now I live in Germany. But never mind. So anyway, I moved to London, and then I found a job that was amazing. I got hired to teach people with disabilities how to become chefs. So it was like a perfect game because I've been cooking in the professional kitchen in the States, and then I studied communicative disorders to do speech language pathology at some point. That's what I was like at some point was the dream, but that dream is sort of very far on that back burner, if you will. And so I was great at my job, and even though it took so much out of me because I had to sort of teach people who were essentially like me. So I had my apprentices who had autism and such and Down syndrome and the like. And it was a super cool experience. And I was like, I'm a natural at teaching. This is awesome. I'm grateful for the opportunity that I had. I did that for 3 years and it took all my patience, all my, I was so stressed all the time. I got shingles and everything. Yeah, so in terms of my health, it really suffered because I put so much of my person into my work. But it was a wonderful, it was a terrific timing batch because I got to travel a bunch. Because this is at the time where like living in the UK was, pre-Brexit and I'm half French, so I just got to walk in how I live here now. And I got to travel a bunch because this was at the time where you could take like a budget airline flight for like £20, $20 give or take, and it would get you to as far as like say Romania if you wanted to go down there, So I traveled a lot, and that was sort of where I got my leg. I traveled before that, mind you, but not as much as I do now and did then for sure. And so yeah, so teaching just came naturally. And then like when I moved to the States again, I came back for a few months at the end of the pandemic to see my father in London. So I stayed for about 6 months. So I was teaching adults and or teenagers rather, teenagers from the inner city. Which is a whole other challenge because they walk in, they see me, I'm white. I mean, I'm half Tunisian, but it's not visible. I'm quite white. My skin is like, yeah, pasty, basically. These are a bunch of like like Latin American or Black kids and so on and so forth. And so they're looking at me like coming from a pretty privileged background, etc. And they're like, who is this person who's coming and teach me now? La-di-da. And that wasn't a struggle being able to connect with them. But after a couple of lessons, they realized it was a very successful operation that I love to teach and I'm good at it. And I can connect people very well, no matter who they are, usually. So it's cool. Fun and enjoyable.
Do you do that now? Like, do you do online classes or something to teach people how to cook? Or do you travel and do cooking classes? Or what are you doing with that?
Right now, like, so today I'm teaching cooking. To my like local expat community in my city in Germany. Like I live near Frankfurt, and so I'm teaching I teach at home right now, and I'm working on going to teach at like a larger cooking studio. It's actually the meeting I have tomorrow, so I think it's crossed as well. So this should, I mean, normally it'll be fine. It's just a question of getting some logistics in place and all that good stuff. But yeah, so I would really like to at some point be able to just like to teach like a larger group of people. I considered opening up my cooking school and so on and so forth, but honestly, that just sounds like too much for my neurodivergent brain. And I know that this limitation that I placed on myself, and that's like, if I put too much pressure on myself, then I'll fail miserably. And I know that. So it's about really sort of gauging, okay, I can do a lot of cool stuff, but as a person who's high anxiety, having a business that's like a huge thing, brick and mortar, requiring a ton of stuff is just not my game. Like, I like to keep it mobile. My business is on my computer, it's in my pocket, and I can teach anywhere I want to.
I like it. Yeah, no, I think it's fantastic. And I just love that you embraced your skill for your passion for writing and you turned that into your profit center basically through your books and whatnot. And just think that's I really just admire your story in so many ways because I'll just tell you a little about myself. It's like I never really could figure out what I was good at. It took me a long time to just find one thing. And so it was a long journey for that reason. And I mean it sounds amazing. I mean your story is so inspirational and just really appreciate it so much. So where do you go from here? Like what's your like 5-year plan? Do you have a goal?
Well, I've had many goals and I've had many ideas. And right now, like I said, I'm working on the new book. I'm gonna, like I said, try to do a different publication route just to sort of share or sort of like side of me that hasn't really been made public, I suppose, in terms of like sexuality and disability and how those things go together. But it's very much like a book for everybody. This is not like a target audience per se. It's like anybody who wants to cook some really great, very like intentional food. And then every couple of recipes, read something super raunchy. So kind of what's happening with that right now. Then in terms of like future cooking, like I said, I've been trying to partner up with this cooking studio that's located in my city to teach the expats over here because they currently have lessons in German. And the idea is for me to jump in with English lessons because there's a lot of Americans and English speakers in general who live in the Darmstadt, Frankfurt area, like in the Hesse, as the state is called. And I'd like to cater to that because when I was first living in Israel, I didn't speak Hebrew at all, and or barely, we'll say, and I couldn't participate in a lot of like activities because of language. And I was a bit like I kind of missed out on that. I still learned Hebrew, it got better, and it was okay, fine. And when I lived in France, it wasn't a problem because I speak French anyway. So I was able to be part of that community and go do classes about random stuff and go to theater and plays and poetry slams or whatever kind of activities that you needed language for. And that's really lacking in my city because like there's a ton of English speakers. Like I said, it's a big international community, but the city and the cultural scene are a little bit thin on all that is activities available in English. And I think it's so important for us to come together and be like, okay, German is a very difficult language. Like I'm learning it now. It's my fifth language, mind you.
Wow.
So it's a lot of real estate in my head in terms of like linguistic aptitude now. Like it's a lot.
Yes.
So I like to really be part of this community and building on like the expat game. Sort of where I'm at right now,
Do you plan
strategically
to
in the
stay
chat.
in Germany for a while then?
A few months rather, a few years. Like, I mean, the goal is another 5 years or so. My partner is a chemist, and he got a contract at the university here, so it's over here in the first place. It's cool, but I've been very lucky to have been able to build community wherever I've gone or whatever, such as really cool.
Yeah, it's true. That would probably intimidate me the most. I have to admit that would be like the biggest thing. I'm like, how am I going to meet people? And I don't know the language.
Very easy. It's just go outside, go online if you're not into being like, "Hi, my name is Lindsay," and and
Yeah,
just go.
cool.
That's all I can tell you, really. If you wanna like pick up roots and go, you have children you mentioned. So the way that I was told, the way that I was told, how to decide if I wanted to have children and la-di-da. It really was just think of it in the same way as when you move countries. You can't think about it too much. So I'm gonna flip that right back at you. And then I tell you, you have kids, you know what that's like. So you don't have to think about it too much before you have children. Before it just happens, life and death, like good for you.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. I mean, I did. I moved from
Just pick up
Arizona
and
to Idaho without, I mean, I had a lot of forethought, obviously, about a house and everything, but it wasn't like I was, the whole friend thing didn't stop me. I figured I'd make friends because I planned on being here for a long time. I think if I was going overseas for a finite amount of time, like a year or something, I would want to go somewhere, at least have a starting point. So I think it's cool what you're doing because you're kind of helping people who've come to Germany get a foothold, build a little bit of a community, and let them get their roots. So then they can learn and immerse themselves in the German culture and the name and all that. So I think it's really cool what you're doing. It'll help more people to make that journey. Germany is a cool place. I'd love to go visit there. Europe is on my list of places to go check out. So if you had to leave us with three must-see countries, what would they be? What are your top three?
I loved living in Israel because it's such a diverse landscape and the food scene is amazing. I would say Slovenia is pretty cool. Like, again, landscape, the people are so wonderful and warm and have a great art scene, and it's a very nice place to visit. And probably Russia, because it's such a weird place to visit, man. Like, it makes the US look tiny because it is such a beast. Like, in Moscow,
Interesting.
I was just there for like about a week or so. My partner's father lives there, so I went to visit. And they have 20-lane highways.
Oh my
Can you imagine
gosh,
that?
no way.
And there's
Wow.
a ton of traffic, which is hilarious. The streets are enormous. Everything is huge and beautiful, and like the architecture in Moscow is fascinating because you have this, like, it shows time, right? Because like you have the sort of like pre-USSR architecture that's very grandiose, super wealthy, gorgeous. And you have like sort of like Soviet architecture where it's just like a bunch of houses that all look the same and it's very confusing and all that. And then today it's much more modern. It's more like, Gotham
Interesting.
metals we have. It's
Yeah.
really a fascinating city in Moscow.
That's
Definitely.
cool. I was listening to an interview, with President Putin and just listening to him talk about his country, it just made me realize like the history is so rich there. The length of time that they've been around was just awing. I'm like, wow, this is so different from what, if you're born in the States and stay in the States, you just don't even have an idea. Like that is just so mesmerizing. So that's cool. I wouldn't have thought of Russia. I'm glad you said that because it now makes me think twice about that. Awesome. So where
I've
can
never looked
people?
at person at all, but yeah, I mean.
Yeah, I know. I could go on. I'm sure you have amazing stories about travel. Like you could do like a whole, I don't know, Instagram about food and travel.
Where is the best, like, do you have a main website where people can come check out all your books, or do they just go to Amazon to do that, or how does that work?
So right now I'm actually building a new website. It's going to be called pickychaircooking.com. So I will send you that link when the website's up. It should be in a couple weeks or so. I'm hoping that I can finish getting it together because I've made some changes. My friend made me a site, let it off, fine. But it needs to be updated. So I'm doing that right
Perfect. And the
now.
episode is going to air a couple weeks from now anyway, so that's good timing.
Oh, that's super fantastic. Yeah, so I will push on my website, just get it done because I'm kind of looking at it. It's a tablet on my computer, I'm dealing with it, but it's something, it's a struggle that I have as a person who's neurodivergent. Like things that don't interest me, I just put them so far away. That's
I wish I had that. I wish I could do that. I'll be honest, that is something I love. My son does that. And I'm like, man, when he is so clear about what he wants, he is on it, and like he 100% is all in. And then it's the complete truth in the opposite way. When there's something that he is not interested in, he's like, no, I can't even imagine doing that. And I actually, one of the things that have slowed me down as an entrepreneur is spending too much time on things that don't interest me or that I'm not really good at, but I didn't want to find somebody else to do it. So, because I'm like, I can, I'll just learn it, even though I hate it. And it's funny because Wendy, we were chatting. I don't even know why this got brought up. He goes, Mom, you know what I love about you most? He said, it's the fact that you can do things you don't love to do. And I'm over here like, I wish I could do what you do and not put my energy into things that I don't want to do and help, because it forces you to find somebody to help you. And just to your point on the website, it's like, is it totally killing your business? No. Will it improve your business? Yes. And because you don't want to do it, then the right person comes along to help you. Like, that's the way it would work if I let it work that way. But instead, I force myself to stick into it for 3 hours, and it's like sticking needles in my eye, like I hate doing whatever it is. Yeah, no, that's a good thing. Okay, so this has been an amazing episode. I'm really grateful that you came and that we had this conversation, and thank you for being so vulnerable and sharing your story. It's just gonna make a difference in somebody's life. I know it. So thank you so much.
Thank you very much for having me. I really appreciate that. And I appreciate that. And I've had a great time with you. I think your reading is amazing. Like having women come on the show. Everybody has a cool story. It really makes sense.
Thank
Super cool
you.
that you provide that platform. I think it's super dope.
Thank you so much.